with me, special guests, Emma's Revolution, and they're going to be coming to the college. And you two tell me about the band, your names, and when the performance is.
Sure, I'm Ted Humphreys.
I'm Sandy O.
And we're Emma's Revolution. We're named for Goldman. Emma Goldman lived from 1869 to 1940. She was an activist, a fierce supporter of the defender of the rights of free speech and the rights of workers and the rights of women. She is known for, there are many stories about Emma Goldman. She was really quite an amazing woman and a very eloquent speaker. So, of course, she was considered a very dangerous woman.
Uh-huh.
And she was doing something, you know, particularly radical one day when she was dancing at a party. A young colleague chastised for behavior unbecoming a woman of her stature, and her response to him was, "Everyone has the right to free expression, to beautiful, radiant things." And in essence, she was probably paraphrased as having said, "If I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution."
Uh-huh.
And we thought that that was the right spirit to do this kind of work in. So Sandy and I are songwriters and performers, and we've been traveling around the country. We both worked as soloists and other sort of combinations with other instrumentalists and other singers for years before, but for the last 7 years, Sandy and I have been traveling around the country doing peace and justice work, and we had done that in our own sort of separate capacities beforehand, but joined forces 7 years ago, and we've been traveling around the country, around the world, meeting with communities working various aspects of peace and justice and human rights, and we're really looking forward to coming up to Princeton.
And that's what we're doing at this concert this Saturday night, October 4th. It's a benefit concert for the United Nations Association of Upper Mohawk Valley, and in support of some of their programs would include a model UN program that maybe some of the students who are there at Hamilton College have participated in. And, of course, we really need we need people of all ages to be thinking globally and to be considering international situations and the lives of people, not just our own country. So we are definitely in support of Model UN programs. And then also they have a Soup for Schools program that they're doing in, let me just see if I remember, yeah, in South Africa. So that's a couple of the programs that they're doing, and part of what's going to happen that evening is we're going to be, but you'll also get to hear a little bit more about the Model UN program and how people can get involved there in the area, you know, and take part in some of the programs that they have. I know they have a lecture series that happens in the spring where they're bringing in folks who are talking about what's really going on in the world. And we do a very similar thing, except that part of what we do is sing about what's going on in the world. We talk about some of the issues because some of the songs we write are about issues that people really don't get to hear about on the corporate news.
Uh-huh.
You know, only certain small pieces of the real story sometimes get through. So in our shows, we're singing songs about issues, including election fraud, which people have definitely, I hope they've heard about. It's very important this year. You know, peace and justice issues and a lot of successes in the peace and justice world that people generally get to hear about.
Well, that's exciting. It's also sounds a lot more fun to the people sing about it than rather have than having them talk about it.
Yeah, we think so. And we actually find that, you know, people are really energized by the end of a concert because they've, you know, they've been like I said, given some of the good news that you don't hear on the general, you know, kind of news programs that we're all inundated with all the time. And then also there you are in a crowd who are also energized about making positive change in the world and here, you know, locally, nationally, and globally. And that is just really heartening. And then plus, there's music and you get to, you know, dance to the revolution, and that's the idea.
Mm-hmm. Can I play a clip from one of your songs from the website?
Sure.
Disgrace, break fall. We have watched
one by one,
years away,
one by one.
Did someone try
one by one
to whisk away
one by one?
But this school,
one by one,
drenched in shame,
one by one,
cannot hide
one by one
behind a name.
One by one,
we have paid
one by one
against our will.
Which musicians have influenced you to become musicians? Were you influenced by other people who were political musicians, or did it come from somewhere else?
I've been influenced by a number of different musicians, mostly musicians that I feel like are willing to speak up about how they feel about what's really going on. And usually, for me, that means, you know, that they speak up about their life, and usually what they say about their life have some bearing on mine. You know, I grew up in Northeast Ohio, so I was growing up, the students were killed at Kent State.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I knew about it because I had sisters that went to school there that had just finished school and they were just starting, you know, right after the killings happened. And I went on to college there some years later, but the whole world found out about those events because of a song that Neil Young wrote called Four Dead in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And that song was out, you know, on the radio within 3 weeks of his writing that. And, you know, songs like that, I think, were really meaningful for me because they told a story that really needed to be told. And I think they carry the emotion of and the gravity of the event in a way that a news report can't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, even news reports earlier on, I think there was a great deal more involvement on the part of the people reporting that's kind of been washed out of reporting now. I think that there's a tendency to sanitize the news and in turn sanitize, you know, things like violence in such a way that we're all very distant from what really went on. And I think it's easy for us to kind of remove ourselves from the personal story of what went on, you know, that day at the university, or, you know, that people struggle around being the war in Vietnam. And likewise, the, you know, the movement to end the war in Iraq and to keep us out of it to begin with. You know, there's, I'm moved by people that are willing to step up and keep the humanity in the story and speak their minds about those kinds of things. You know, someone that was doing that, someone else that was doing that when I was growing up was Pete Seeger, and who was also sort of living his values and not just talking about issues, but really making those issues relevant in his own life. And you know, I appreciate that. You know, another artist that we've worked with that, quite a bit in this last half or so is Holly Neer, who's spoken out. You know, we're probably a generation older than the most of the folks there at the university, so our, you know, influences are some of the folks that came through four generations before us and started speaking up about these things. But I think there's a long continuum of that happening, and there are young folks that are speaking up, and a whole movement of people that are discovering some of the work of Art like Phil Oakes, you know, who are really important artists that spoke out about issues, and it's exciting for us to be part of that continuum and to see it, you know, go on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and from my side, this is Sandy speaking. I grew up listening to pop and rock, but I ended up playing the lute, which is a Renaissance instrument from the 1600s and the 1500s. And so it was a funny position to be in. Like, I loved the music sounded, but the words of the songs that I would end up singing were just completely not something I could get behind. You know, like, the values in the 15th and 16th centuries, especially about how women were treated or what women's positions were in the world, it's just not something I was going to get behind. Mm-hmm. So it really pointed out to me how important it is to know what I'm saying as a singer and a performer, and to care about what I'm saying with my words, because it really does make a difference. You know, the music can be beautiful, but if the words are saying something that's hateful or, you know, limiting to people or whatever, just not even helpful in any way, then I just didn't want to be doing that. So that was one influence that I had, was literally coming out of that. As for sort of more current performers that we enjoy, we really love Dixie Chicks' latest album, and I don't know if you've heard it or seen the film about them. The film's called Shut Up and Sing, and it was about the response once Natalie Maines said, when it was a few years ago now, probably 3 years ago, mm-hmm. where she said that we're ashamed that the president is from Texas. And you may remember, you know, that some of these radio stations started burning their CDs, and this whole big brouhaha, and they were completely, you know, they were pretty much going to be ostracized, and they started, that was starting to happen, but they really stood ground, and then this last album that they did, they won 5 Grammys. It's a great album, the music is great, and the power behind what they're saying is very, very strong, because they're really talking about what happened in their lives and how they stood up to the pressure.
That's great. I haven't seen the movie.
It's a really great movie, and just really inspiring and fun and great music, so I love that one.
I'm glad to hear that they're doing well, because
I realized
that it was a political brouhaha.
We want to catch them someday, but I don't know. We haven't quite done it yet, but we will someday.
Well, how about people who want to catch you? What day is that, and where on campus is it?
Saturday, October 4th. Let me just find the details. It's at the Clark Kirkland Arts Center.
Oh.
So what they tell me is it's 9 1/2 East Park Row, and I guess the half maybe made a difference so that you find the right door. But it's a concert. It starts at 8 on Saturday, October 4th, benefit for the United Nations Association of Upper Mohawk Valley mm-hmm. at the Kirkland Arts Center in Clinton.
Okay, and it's in a building that looks kind of like a church. It's right across from the Village Green, for those of you who are looking for it.
Cool. And, you know, we just want to let folks know out there, we have a MySpace page which you can hear in their entirety and you can download, and that's, you can search for our name, Emma's Revolution. And we have our own website, emmasrevolution.com, where there are clips from all of our songs from our recordings and a lot of information about the activist groups that we work with, and it's just a great site to share info about what's going on in the world.
Can you tell me a little bit about the groups that you two work with?
Sure. Well, one thing we just, we're about to go in mid-October, in about 2 weeks, we're about to go to Ohio to perform with a group of other performers, including Holly Neer, who Pat mentioned, and a woman named Laura Love, who some of y'all might know, and a bunch of others, like 17 other musicians going. And the idea is to go and inspire people to keep on keeping on and get people out to the polls. And I know what we hear now is that the polls are showing that Obama is in the lead, and we hope it remains that way, but we want to do our part to get people inspired and to really talk about the issues that that people need to be thinking about in order to make this decision. And we were also recently just found out about a group called No More Stolen Elections, and they have a website that you can find. It's nomorestolenelections.org. And they're pledging, and they want people to pledge along with them, to take action on November 5th if there is any question about voter suppression or votes not being counted or, you know, this whole electronic voting machines and how problematic those are. So that's some of the recent stuff that's coming up. We did an event last week with a retired U.S. Army colonel whose name is Ann Wright, and she was one of the first State Department officials to resign when Bush administration went to war in Iraq. She's a very powerful speaker, and she goes to all the activist events that are happening and can testify to what happens in those congressional hearing rooms where they're making these decisions about whether to go, you know, what's going to happen with the troop surge, or is it really working? Mm-hmm. And she just has an insider's view, and also she has all the stats, having worked in the military for 30 years.
Almost 40 years.
Wow.
So we did an event with her down in Charlottesville, Virginia, mm-hmm. and we just played at a piece of it in Garden City in Long Island, New York, which was supporting the peace work of a Unitarian church on Long Island, and their particular peace work has a lot to do with anti-racism work and creating a multicultural congregation at their church and also a multi-generational congregation.
Have you been to the demonstrations at the School of the Americas?
Yeah, this will be our seventh year down to Columbus, Georgia, outside the gates of Fort Benning. It's really it's one of our favorite demonstrations. It's a remarkable range of different voices standing up against torture, the torture school behind those gates there. And as I said, there are speakers, there are survivors of torture who come down. There are celebrities that come and speak. Martin Sheen has been there on numerous occasions. And Sister Helen Prejean, who wrote the book Dead Man Walking, Susan Sarandon, who played her in the film, many different folks come from all over the country and throughout Latin America to speak out against this torture school. It's interesting to us that when we travel outside the U.S., and we were in Chile last December with Holly Neer, looking for the families of the disappeared, mm-hmm. Those that were disappeared, tortured and murdered by Pinochet, who we helped put in power, the CIA-backed coup that helped install him mm-hmm. in power and helped them get rid of their democratically elected at the time, Allende. And we met with the families, and we met with survivors, torture, and all you have to do is mention the School of the Americas, and everybody knows what that is. Mm-hmm. Everywhere in Latin America, people know about the School of the Americas because they know people who were tortured by graduates. They know people who were disappeared. You know, them have family members or were tortured themselves by graduates. It's only in the United States where this school is housed where people don't that we fund through our tax dollars a Abu Ghraib-style torture school. And it's every year more and more people come down, they learn about it, and they come down and stand up and show their opposition to it. You know, this demonstration started a little bit shy of 20 years ago, I think now, with about 11 people. And last year there were 25,000 people standing outside the gates.
Wow.
Standing and speaking and singing and holding banners and photos of the disappeared and puppets. And it's really a remarkable festival of remembrance of those who were killed, and reminder that their spirit is present even now, and that there are many, many thousands and hundreds of thousands and probably millions of people that oppose that kind of school being funded anywhere on any continent, but least of all here in the U.S., where we still say that we don't support them.
As you probably know, Peter, maybe there's a group on campus there that sends a delegation down to the demonstration every year, but there are just thousands and thousands of college-age students at the School of the Americas Watch Vigil. And, in fact, there's a whole range of people. I mean, there are folks with babies. There are 86-year-old nuns who cross the line and get arrested, bring attention to this torture school that Pat was talking about. But the vast majority of people who are there are college students who are saying, you know, this is my country, and we are not going to be torturing. We are not creating torturers on our soil with the money that I'm soon to be paying, you know, when I get out of school, for instance. So we love this event, and there's just so much energy and a whole lot of music, and, as Pat mentioned, puppetry, and just a whole lot of art that whole weekend, which is kind of one of the things that makes it one of the strongest demonstrations we go to. It's really not a series of people talking at you. It's really music and art and drama and theater and just all of these kind of things that give energy to keep moving.
Mm-hmm. It's very positive. I was there in 2001, and when I was there, there was 5,000 people in attendance. So that's why I was very surprised.
Yeah, I think we went that year, huh?
I think that was
maybe we went the year after. But it's amazing. It's really increased. Every year we've gone, it's increased by at least 5,000 every year.
Excellent.
So that it was, you know, 25 this past year, 25,000.
I heard that the, I forget if it was the Congress or the Senate, that was 5 votes away from cutting off funding.
That's right, and they also passed something this year, and I can't remember if it was the Congress or Senate either, but forcing the school to show its records and show its books and be much more transparent, so they can't hide behind, well, we're a school, we don't have to, you know, disclose everything that we're doing. So that was a major victory, and you're right, that every year the vote gets closer and closer to close the school, and that's been the demand for the 16 years that this vigil has been going on. And you may have heard when you were there in 2001, but the vigil really was, six people who just stood outside the gates and said, this school closed down. And in those 16 years, look at how it's grown.
Yeah, it was a handful of people. I think it's one of the first times they ran through the school and threw buckets of red paint on the walls.
Yeah, yeah.
And here we are less than 20 years later, and we're closing it. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's really important for people to know how powerful, you know, when people put their minds to it and decide to say, we won't take it anymore, you know, you really can have an impact, and that's so important to us and the work we do, and certainly to, you know, the students who are at Hamilton College. This is, you know, this is your chance now to make a difference in the world.
That was actually my first place where I became politically conscious.
So, that's a great one.
Yeah. Me and a friend were traveling cross-country, and we got an email from another friend that when we were in Tennessee, and they said, come down to Georgia. There's something going on.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's great.
So
it's really quite an event. Father Roy Bourgeois and a handful of folks started that years ago, and it's grown into a remarkably powerful event.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we wrote a song the first year we went down there called One by One that's on our CD, One Times a Million Equals Change.
Wow.
And we sing it there every year.
That's exciting. What other events do you frequent or have you been to? Or what are causes that you're interested in?
There's a group based here in the D.C. area that's called Earth International. And what's unique about them is that they are, and they have been for the last 15 years, saying that human rights and environmental justice must be sought together, you know. You can't really have one without the other. And we met them a couple of years ago. The cup started it. He's Burmese, and she's a lawyer from the U.S. And they met while she was teaching English over at a refugee camp on the Thai-Burma border. And because she was in law school, she was very interested in hearing about what was going on, the human rights abuses that were going on in Burma. Because at the refugee camp were all these Burmese people who had escaped from Burma. And as I heard, you know, just in the last 2 to 3 years, we really got to witness how brutal the Burmese military is when we saw them attacking monks, you know, on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
But there was Kate a number of years ago finding this out as a young American lawyer, and she came back to finish her law school degree, and she had heard about all these abuses that were committed by the Burmese military on the people of Burma, because there was a number of oil corporations were putting a pipeline across Burma, and one of the oil corporations was a U.S.-based corporation, Unocal. They're based in California. And hearing what had happened to these people, they had been tortured, or their family members had been murdered, or they had been enslaved to work on the pipeline on behalf of oil corporations, Katie came back to finish her law school degree, and she found a law that's been on the books here in the United States since the late 1700s. It's called the Alien Tort Claims Act. And in her paper, Katie asserted that it was going to be, that this law should be used to hold U.S. corporations accountable for atrocities committed off of U.S. soil, but on behalf of that U.S. corporation. And as she told us the story, she got it in the paper, but her professor said, but it'll never work. But in fact, it did work. They took Unocal Oil Corporation to court. It took 10 years, but 3 years ago, they won a landmark lawsuit victory on the 15 villagers from Burma who had been abused, tortured by the Burmese military on behalf of Unocal Oil Corporation, and they won a $30 million settlement.
Wow.
For those 15 villagers.
Incredible.
And you can imagine how much money that is to anyone, but especially to people who are living in, literally living in thatched huts with earth floor. And one of the most heartening things about that story is that nearly all of those villagers decided to share the money that they won in this lawsuit with their entire villages, to just bring the whole village up, you know, do whatever they needed to do to create a school or a hospital or something like that. And we recently were at a fundraiser for Earth Rights International here in D.C. The next corporation that they're taking to court is Chevron Oil, Chevron Unocal, but Earth Rights is taking them to court for atrocities that Chevron committed in Nigeria, or that were committed for Chevron by a militia in Nigeria.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. And it's, again, these were the Katie and her husband, Casella, they were first just this really sweet couple who used to come to our concerts in the D.C. area. We thought, oh, they're just these great people, and they've got these great kids. And then we saw them on Nightline. And there was a whole story about their victory. And it was just so inspiring. And, you know, we really want people to hear that, you know, just folks that you're going to meet every day are making and can make monumental changes. And that's the kind of thing that keeps Pat and me working, you know, on all the issues that we work on, because we actually are making change.
Well, I have to have you guys on more often, because so often I'm trying to point out things that need tending to, but it's wonderful to hear about things that actually became resolved.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a combination. I so hear what you're saying, that sometimes it's just hard to keep hearing about what's going wrong, you know?
Yeah.
But it's important for us all to share the information about the victories, because how else are we going to change? And, you know, people talk about, well, have we stopped the war in Iraq? Truthfully, who knows where this administration would be if there hadn't been as much activism as there continues to be against that war, against funding for the war, against all of the spin on that war, against all of the build-up to the war in Iran. We are really, really making a difference, and we need to remind you of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me a little bit about the music itself that you play.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Well,
we both play guitar.
Okay.
And we both sing, and we both write the songs, so there's a lot of harmony But there's also a lot of rhythm terror music. We like to have a good time and get people moving and have ourselves, you know, have a lot of energy in our performances. So we have a pretty upbeat performance.
Yeah, we largely play acoustic guitars. Our stuff is actually would be as well suited to electric instruments as it would be acoustic instruments. It's just it's less to carry, frankly, if we're carrying around our acoustic instruments. So, and we're, you know, influenced from a lot of different directions. There's certainly, you know, there's certainly sort of influence, but there's also a world music influence and Pac influence in our music, and we kind of Sandy and I combine our different influences, and the idea is to energize people, not just through the stories, but the stories are really important, you know, part of it, but also through the sound of the music as well. You know, as you know well, you know, getting this kind of news about all the stuff that's going wrong in the world can be really overwhelming. So it is part of our work to keep people inspired and energized around the successes as well as the work ahead.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's, you know, it can be challenging, I think, to keep the perspective
mm-hmm.
on that. So it's got to be fun. It's got to be hopeful and joyful.
Well, it's energizing just speaking to you two.
That's great.
Is there a particular one single cause that you're focusing on right now?
You know, that for us, all the things that are going on are very interrelated.
Yeah.
So we address a broad range of things because there's, you know, there are always underlying common threads. You know, there's that, you know, the racism of companies like y'all that, you know, that underlie that their actions in Burma. There's the economic disparity. There, you know, all those kinds of things that are for the environment, because they're in an area where there are no standards necessarily, because the, you know, the issues are more issues of day-to-day survival. So there isn't an active environmental movement the way there is in a country that's as affluent as the U.S. You know, so you know, it's really, these stories could be happening anywhere. They happen to be happening where they are, you know, because of the economics or because of the racial makeup or the, you know, the economic disparity between the U.S. and those countries. And but they are, you know, regular people's stories that when they flash across the television screen, very distant. But, you know, when you bring them down to, you know, to people's, you know, stories of everyday survival and wanting to raise their families and, you know, really having common needs,
mm-hmm.
I think it, you know, it brings them all closer to home, and I think helps us to understand the ways in which we can, you know, either be oblivious in the choices that we make, or understand that choices that we make right here in our own communities have an impact globally. You know, the companies that we support, the products we buy, you know, whether we support sweatshops or whatnot, you know, each one of those individual sort of daily choices have an impact cumulatively, you know. So we just try to help people be aware of how connected their lives are to other people's lives, but also help people understand how essential their involvement is. And it doesn't mean that everybody has to be traveling all around the country, you know, addressing people in the way that we do or demonstrating in the streets, but everybody has to do exactly what they can do from where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And there's room for tremendous diversity in movements for social change. You know, for some people it's working on the elections, for other people it's writing a check, or a series of checks. You know, for some people, it's volunteering at a homeless shelter or at a soup kitchen, or, you know, it's just people being engaged and conscious about the importance of their involvement, that the value of their own choices, and the you know, that keeping in mind that they can do have an impact, and it can either be by sitting at home doing nothing, you know, which allows the status quo to just roll along over people the way it does, mm-hmm. or by, you know, actually getting up and doing what they can from where they are.
Well,
you know, I was thinking about how, of course, the election is in everyone's mind, and, of course, the bailout. But on the election front, not only are we working to get the vote out for Obama, but also for a candidate in our area who's a Green Party candidate running for Congress, and his platform is changing the climate in Congress, because his point is that we need a green economy in order to get away from war and away from, you know, peak oil and all this kind of stuff. And so I encourage people to check out who's running in your local races at the same time as also focused on the national race. I think one thing to keep in mind is, really, who's running for school board? Who is running for that judge positionship? These things really make a difference, and they're just, you know, they're so important as well.
Great point. Well, for people who are concerned about their vote not counting possibly in the election, like you were saying earlier, it summarizes down to every dollar spent is a vote for the world that you want.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, nice.
And, you know, Sandy and I try to be conscious to the extent that we can. You know, we tour in a hybrid car. There are sometimes, you know, times when we fly to our gigs, but we really try to minimize those and, you know, try to be aware. We exchange all of our electricity use and I'm in our office for wind credits. We're mindful of the way that that we use energy where we are. I mean, all those things have an effect. You know, if everyone is, you know, doing what they can do, it does make a difference.
Yeah, you know, when Pat was talking about everyone doing what they're doing, I was thinking about you in this radio program and talking about issues like this. So thank you for doing that, Peter.
Oh, you're very welcome. This is actually the first time I've ever done an interview from my dining room table.
And, not bad, huh? Working at home.
No, so that's pretty exciting, and we're burning candlelight.
Nice. That's great.
Let's see. Do you guys have any websites that you want to direct the listeners to?
Yeah, we'd love to direct you to our website, which is emmasrevolution.com. And again, we're named for Emma Goldman, so it's the woman's name, Emma, S, and then Revolution, so Emma Revolution. And that has all of our tour schedule, including the show that's coming up on October 4th in Clinton, and all of these links to organizations, many of whom we talked about with you on the program. The Earthright International, United for Peace and Justice, you know, groups that people know the names of, and many that they don't. So we invite you to go there or find us on MySpace and hear some of our songs and send us a comment. Let us know what you're thinking.
And we love to hear from folks about groups that they know about that we may not have crossed paths with yet. I mean, we meet a lot of folks on the road, but we certainly can't meet everybody, and we love hearing from people about amazing stuff that's going on in different places around the tree and around the world, because there's always, always amazing stuff going on.
And a thing that I haven't asked you about that you'd like to speak about.
I think that covers it pretty well for now.
Oh, good. Well, then I'm glad I did a thorough job, and it was wonderful speaking to you, too, and maybe I'll run into you this Saturday at the Kirkland Arts Center.
We look forward to it.
Let us know if you can come. We can put you on the list or something.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it'll be great.
Thanks again.
All right,
thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.